painful.
And now Soler delivers. Boy, it's an inning too late because the Royals, who were completely shut down with the bases loaded and nobody out, and Soler comes up to start the next frame and deposits one over the wall for his 15th home run of the year.
Steve Fisiak with the call as Jorge Soler with his 15th homer, but that was the only run the Royals would get as the Royals fall to the Rangers. And what do you know? They won the first game of the series, lost the last three. They're good for one win every series, I'm telling you. It's like clockwork. Now they're below that 33% winning percentage. They're 19-40. Got to make one up somehow.
Yeah, because they actually lost to all three to the White Sox. And
yes.
They have won one of their last seven instead of three.
19-40, Royals 10 hits, and just couldn't get anything going. And guys suddenly that pitch against the Royals are guys that look like the next coming of Cy Young.
We got the bases loaded in the fifth inning, I think it was, nobody out. And he made an adjustment. I think from the time we got the bases loaded, he threw two fastballs. He just went soft. He would change ups and slow curveballs. And, I mean, just did a good job of, you know, a lot of times a young pitcher will get in that situation and want to try to power his way through it. Well, he did just the opposite. You know, he totally abandoned his fastball and went soft. Change up, curveballs, and one or two sliders. So you got to kind of take your hat off to him there. He did a nice job.
Royals go 1-6 on their road trip. 67 strikeouts for the offense during those seven games. That's almost 10 strikeouts a game. This is not your World Series champion Royals who put the ball in play. No siree. They struck out 47 times in the four-game series against Texas. They're off today. Then they get the Red Sox, the White Sox, and the Tigers at the K. One of those games with the Tigers is in Omaha. So the Royals road trip mercifully comes to an end with a 1-6 trip. And the bigger excitement is the Royals draft tonight. And thank goodness there's no game to worry about today. Although I will say Brad Kelly yesterday didn't pitch bad. Seven innings, and he struck out six, didn't walk anybody. Good control. He's been struggling with that throughout the season. But the draft is tonight, and Bobby Witt Jr. is the guy you got to look out for because that is a five-tool player. He's a high school prep shortstop. Yes, the Royals have a shortstop. We get it. But the Royals have the number two overall pick. And to me, it's simple. You go with the best talent available. And it sounds like this high school kid could very well be that person. So we'll see if the Royals take Bobby Witt Jr. with the second overall pick. Although there is talk that now the Baltimore Orioles may have changed their mind as to who they're going to pick number one. If they take Bobby Witt Jr., then what do the Royals do? Because they're set at catcher for a while. One of the top guys Baltimore is expected to take was a catcher. So it will be interesting to see what the Royals do. They have four of the top 109 picks in the draft. They had actually five of the top 109 picks. They have picks 2, 44, 70, 80, and 109. Last year, they had four of the top 40 picks. So the Royals are restocking their farm system. And if they're going to turn things around and be competitive within a couple of years, they have to hit on their draft picks last year and this year. So it's an important part for the franchise turning things around. Certainly this year it's not happening in regards to wins on the field, but there are some bright spots for the Royals, but not enough to overcompensate for all of the losses at 19-40. They get the day off, and we'll focus on the Major League Baseball draft tonight. Now, good news, at least to me, Chris Owings no longer a Royal. Not saying he's the reason the Royals are 19-40. Far from it. But he wasn't helping this team when he's striking out about every single time. Chesler Cuthbert is back with the Royals again. That guy just comes back from the dead over and over, doesn't he? He is with the Royals, hit a home run in his first game back. So he's up with the Royals. Chris Owings was designated for assignment. So the Royals have made a change there, which I think most Royals fans are happy with. But even since they've let go of Owings, it hasn't changed the Royals losing ways. All right, local sports information, Dusty. Some All-Star games taking place over the weekend. And then, of course, we'll have coverage of more All-Star games coming up this weekend.
Yes, the Twin Valley Conference Northern Plains League State Line All-Star games took place up in Red Cloud, Nebraska on Saturday with the TVC and Northern Plains League. And unfortunately, the NPL lost both of those games. And the boys' game was 93-83 TVC. And the girls' game 48-37. We're going to post more information on those games coming up here at some point today at nckssports.com. The Kansas Volleyball Association hosted their annual All-Star match Saturday night at Washburn's Lee Arena in Topeka. A red team defeated the blue team 4-1 in a 5-set match. Elizabeth Hardacre of Thunder Ridge was a member of that red team that picked up the win. And the blue team won the first set, but the red team took the next four. It was automatically a 5-set match, regardless of what the final score was going to be. Again, the red team won 4-1. As we mentioned, Hardacre, part of that red team. Breezy Schroeder of Beloit and Grayson Hutchinson of Smith Center played for the blue team. You can read more about the matches at ncksports.com. Also, a big thing that happened at that event, the Beloit Lady Trojans volleyball team was named the 3A Program of the Year by the KVA. If you're interested, the criteria for that award is based on the current year record and finish, repetitive success, improvement of an existing program, and junior varsity and underclassmen success, professional involvement, contributions to the improvement of volleyball, and personal coaching improvement. That all fits for the Beloit Lady Trojans as far as that's concerned, as they continue to improve as a program. Lady Trojans went 37-6 and finished third place at the 3A state tournament here this past fall. And again, the Beloit Lady Trojans volleyball team, the 3A Program of the Year by the Kansas Volleyball Association. So, that's what happened here this weekend with All-Star activity. As Wade mentioned, we do have 8-man All-Star games coming up here this weekend. 80 of the best players in the state will be coming into camp tomorrow. They'll probably show up right around noontime and get things rolling, have their first events scheduled about 2 o'clock, and they'll have start practices tomorrow and then roll through the rest of the week with those practices as well. And we're going to be covering it all week here on Katy Country 94 and Z96.3 Sports, and also at 8manallstars.com. You'll see stories this week on area athletes that are playing, and we're going to be talking, hopefully get to some practices and talk with them as well here during the sports ticket during the week. So a lot of activity going on there, and we're looking forward to the games on Saturday as well. Division 2 game will be first, with pregame coverage beginning at 9:30 and kickoff at 10, and then the Division 1 game will follow coming up on Saturday from Trojan Field. So we invite everybody to attend there and make sure you're tuning in for our coverage throughout the week from the 8-man All-Star games in Beloit.
Yep, lots of coverage coming up. We'll really get it going here in the next few days. And, of course, the pep rally coming up on Friday night at Chautauqua Park from 4 to 5, which will be a lot of fun. And they have all kinds of things planned at the NCK Tech College Friday evening for kids to get involved, punt, pass, and kick contest, and have a highlight reel of what took place during the week. It's going to be a bigger event than it's ever been before, thanks to the folks over at the Beloit Area Chamber of Commerce, Mitchell County Commission on Tourism. And, you know, this is kind of a vision that I've had for a long time for the 8-man games. It's just a matter of getting the right people in place to really be go-getters and work hard to make it happen. And so a step in the right direction, no doubt, to make it a huge, huge deal. The players feel special, which they usually do, but then just go the extra mile, which they're going to do certainly this week. We'll look forward to hosting the pep rally that we co-sponsored down at Chautauqua Park coming up at 4 o'clock on Friday. Moved that from downtown to the park, a little more shade, a little later in the day from 4 to 5. Then you can go grab a bite, eat somewhere there in Beloit, wherever the case may be, run home if you're locals, and then go up to the college. I think beginning around 8 o'clock is when they really get stuff going up there out on the football fields. It's a good setup for what they're planning on doing. So we look forward to all of that. Gene called and left a message, and he said, I'm just wondering, since Ryan Lefevre was critical of the umpiring recently, I haven't heard him on the radio or TV over the weekend. Did he get in trouble? From everything I've found out, and I have not texted Ryan, but I could, although I don't know if I want to in this situation, but I haven't found anything about Ryan being suspended or in trouble for his comments. I don't know why he should be, because that was an opinion, and honestly, I think most people would agree with his opinion.
If he got suspended for that, I should have been suspended a lot of times.
Yeah,
probably.
Most of us, yes. Pretty much all broadcasters, more than likely. I have not read anything. I've gone online. I've done a search. I don't see anything with Ryan Lefevre as to whether he's been, like, suspended. Maybe the Royals just pulled him off the air for a few days, and it's not really a suspension per se. They're just saying, hey, maybe he has some time off. He was going to have this off anyway. I don't know. I don't know if I feel right in asking him that myself.
Yeah.
It just seems a little nosy. And I'm not meaning anything disrespectful to Gene, because Gene, once you say that, I got to thinking about it. I'm like, you know, that's a good question, but I'm just not going to send Ryan a text on that one. But we'll keep an eye on it and also be paying attention to the radio broadcast, TV broadcast, and see winner if Ryan comes back, which he will. I mean, he's one of the best in the business. We've had him on our show many times. But as far as we know, he is not in any trouble, as far as we know, in regards to saying that that was bad umpiring, which he never said a bad word or anything like that. And so we shall see. I will say this, though. There are times where broadcasters aren't allowed to voice their opinion much anymore. And I think that's it's unfortunate, because we are getting to the point in some cases where broadcasters have to be lemmings and do and say whatever the organization wants them to say or do, or even the professional sports, whether it be the NFL or the National Hockey League, the NBA, or Major League Baseball. So I certainly hope that's not the case, because I don't see anything that he did that was inappropriate or wrong. But we shall follow that story, if there is a story to follow. A big story to follow is boxing. We don't talk a lot of boxing around here. I have to admit, I don't know a lot about boxing in regards to who's the contenders, this and that. I followed the Mayweather-McGregor thing, which was a complete stunt and circus. But I was still intrigued by it. I can't tell you the best boxers at all the different weight classes. I know Terrence Crawford from Omaha is an outstanding boxer, so forth and so on. I'm aware of Deontay Wilder, who knocked out a guy in the first round recently. I am aware of Tyson Fury, and those two are going to have a matchup again in the ring, a rematch of a fight they've had before. What I was not aware of was there was a heavyweight boxing match taking place over the weekend, and it may not go down as an upset, the magnitude of Buster Douglas knocking out Mike Tyson for the heavyweight world title, or even Hassan Rahman drilling Lennox Lewis to do the same. But Andy Ruiz Jr. knocked out Anthony Joshua in the seventh round on Saturday night to take his three heavyweight belts, an absolute shocker. Sold out, Madison Square Garden was packed, 20,000 people, including many of Anthony Joshua's British countrymen, because he's British, and he was making his debut in the U.S., and everybody's all excited about it. Figured he'd just cruise. He was 11-1 favorite over Ruiz. And if you've seen some of the video, the highlights, or you watch the fight, Andy Ruiz Jr. looks like a guy that's been sitting on his couch for a long time. He looks like Butterbean a little bit, except he has some hair. But he knocked out Anthony Joshua. He knocked him to the canvas not once, not twice, not three times, four times. So that's not a fluke. And you look at Anthony Joshua, and you put him next to Andy Ruiz. And if you just put him on the street next to each other and you ask which one is a professional fighter, trust me, no one would say that Ruiz is. He's the first Mexican to be the heavyweight champion of the world. And it's pretty amazing stuff. A little more than a year ago, Andy Ruiz Jr. represented himself as his own manager. He was offered $30,000, which is nothing, to fight Anthony Joshua. And I mean nothing as in the boxing frame of things. Well, Saturday night, he got $7 million for the fight. Now he's heavyweight champion of the world, and he'll make even more, as you can imagine. He was absolutely a gigantic underdog, and he put Joshua onto the canvas four times, and Joshua could not continue. They called off the fight in the seventh round. An absolute stunner and shocker. And I'm telling you, you just pull up pictures of Andy Ruiz Jr., and you pull up pictures of Anthony Joshua, and you'll still shake your head, even if you don't know anything about boxing, you'll be shaking your head going, how in the world did that guy beat that guy and knock him down four times? It is insane. It looks like an overweight. I'm sure Andy Ruiz has heard this before, so I'm sure he's not offended. He looks like an overweight, out of shape guy. That's simple as that. Yeah. I could go even further, but that's probably the easiest way to do it. And Anthony Joshua looks like a physical beast. Just goes to show you that's why they play the game. That's why they play the sport. That's why they have the boxing match. I remember no one thought that Buster Douglas had any chance of beating Mike Tyson. And I remember back then, you know, I wasn't quite as shocked as other people that Buster Douglas won that fight. I was stunned by how badly Mike Tyson was dominated in that fight. Because I knew going into that fight that Mike Tyson's mind wasn't right, which of course his mind wasn't really ever right. Mm-hmm. But there was all kinds of distractions going in that fight, and I was aware of those at the time when I was watching it. And that really, you know, that Mike Tyson was invincible. And then once he got knocked out Buster Douglas, I mean, he was certainly mortal after that. Anthony Joshua was nowhere near Mike Tyson's level, but it's still a huge upset. And this was supposed to be the coming out party for Anthony Joshua in the U.S. And Great Britain stunned by the development of some overweight Mexican fighter knocking him down four times. So it's an awesome story. Andy Ruiz Jr., he said, you know, my mom, we're all set now, Mom. We're good to go. Pretty amazing. A guy, and by the way, he wasn't even going to get this fight. Andy Ruiz Jr. wasn't even supposed to fight Anthony Joshua. There was another fighter lined up, but he failed three drug tests. Not one, not two, but three drug tests. Thus, who are we going to fight? Oh, let's get this big flabby guy from Mexico. Let's fight this guy. That'll be easy. 6 foot two, 268 pounds. He looks like he eats at a Snickers bar before every fight. But he's the new heavyweight champion of the world. Amazing stuff. Amazing stuff.
He's got some pretty serious ink, too, from what I'm seeing.
Yeah, he's got some ink. He does have some ink.
But, yeah, he does. It's like I saw a picture of him on Saturday night after the fight was over. I'm with you. I don't know a lot about what – I honestly hadn't heard of either one of these guys, to be completely honest. So, but, yeah, I saw that picture. I was like, oh, that's the guy that won, huh? You just look at him, you're like, yeah, he does. He just looks like he just got the call. They're like, play it to the bone. Like, they get the call to come fight, and then they come fight, and then it ends up being a good fight. And that's what it looked like. He's like, bring this guy in. Let's see what he can do, and then he gets the win.
Well, he got knocked down the third round. It's like, okay, here we go. That's what we thought. Instead, he came back and dropped Joshua twice in the same round. That doesn't happen very often in boxing, which I love boxing matches like that. Guy gets knocked down, and by the end of the round, he wins the round. That's insane. Ruiz said, that was my first time getting dropped on the floor. It just made me stronger. It just made me want it more. I just had to knock him down back. I took his power because of the Mexican warrior I am. I have that Mexican blood in me. Talking about the Mexican fighting style, I just proved it. Why, yes. Yes, you did. Andy Ruiz Jr., your new heavyweight champion. Three belts he takes away from Anthony Joshua. So it kind of shakes up the heavyweight division just a little bit. Nobody was expecting that whatsoever. NBA playoffs, the NBA finals underway. It's interesting. I want to start here. The Warriors do win last night. Series tied one apiece. Fred VanVleet has had an outstanding last six, seven playoff games since the birth of his son. Darren Rovella's interesting tweet, and there's a picture, and you don't even recognize this guy to be Fred VanVleet because it's his high school picture when he's playing basketball. It says, when did Fred VanVleet start getting good at basketball? In the fourth grade, he started playing one-on-one games before school. He'd wake up at 5:30 in the morning and be on the court by 6. The love of the game kept him away from the drugs and gangs in Rockford, Illinois. And now he's an outstanding player in the NBA and was an undrafted player from Wichita State. But you could tell he was special his freshman year at Wichita State. And I'm not surprised at all or shocked by anything that he does in the NBA. I thought when he went undrafted, like, seriously, he went undrafted? Somebody's going to get a steal. I just felt really strongly about him. He's got the it factor. Last night, not enough of the it factor as Golden State does win game two, and there's all kinds of drama in this one. We'll talk about it in a moment.
Throws cross court to Livingston. Good catch. Goes to Andre. He's open. Launches a three. Buried it! He buried it with 5.9 to go! Clutch shot by Andre Iguodala. And there, he absolutely saved this game.
Andre Iguodala, the wide open three with about 8 seconds to go. He nails it, and the Warriors survive and win 109-104. And one of the things that should be pointed out in this game is the last 5 minutes of this game was ugly. Because this game it looked like the Warriors had it. The Raptors hung around. The Warriors couldn't do anything offensively. The Raptors had wide open shots. Fred VanVleet had quite a few of them, actually, and couldn't knock them down. And you just felt after a few misses that it just wasn't going to happen. But it was there. And the Warriors only had a two-point lead. There's about a three-second differential between game clock and shot clock. And I thought that the Raptors were going to foul anybody besides Curry. I was like, if Iguodala gets the ball, you got to foul him. He's not a good foul shooter. Draymond Green had it. They had a chance to foul. They didn't. They were trapping and pressuring Curry. Curry nearly threw the ball away. And one of the underrated things of that game last night, people talk about Iguodala's wide-open three that he hit and had the guts to take with still about four on the shot clock. People will talk about the injury to Klay Thompson, the hamstring, and Kevon Looney's out with an injury, and Kevin Durant didn't play, and Boogie Cousins was really good last night, which he made more of an impact than I thought he would. 11 points, 10 rebounds, 6 assists. He was big for them in 26 minutes. But honestly, the unsung hero of the game to me is Sean Livingston, because Steph Curry was about to throw the ball away, and Kawhi Leonard was ready to grab the ball and go the other way, and the Raptors are down two. And Curry made a bad pass. And Sean Livingston absolutely came and met the ball and then had the presence of mind to quickly throw it to Iguodala, who was wide open at all day, to wind up and shoot the three. And that was the final dagger. The series tied at one apiece. That's the championship DNA that the Warriors have. So Steve Kerr, a lot of talk about the Raptors' defense after game one. Steve Kerr said it was a matter of getting their defense figured out for game two.
I said yesterday and today that 109 points is plenty to win the game, which is what we had in game one, but we gave up 118. So it was all about our defense, and we held them to 37% and, you know, forced 15 turnovers and guarded the three-point line well. So it was championship defense, and that's what it's going to take.
And it is tied, the series 1-1. Durant may play game three coming up on Wednesday at Golden State, but Klay Thompson right now is unsure if he's going to play with a hamstring injury. He's going to have an MRI on it. Looney is out as well. Fred VanVleet, despite injuries to the Warriors, the Raptors know what they're facing now that the series is tied at a game apiece.
We know what we're dealing with here, and obviously we would like to play better, and we would like to have a chance to win at the end like we did. We fought back, and we know that going towards game three, we got to play a lot better, and it's going to be even harder on the road, but we're capable, and you know, we know what we bring to the table. So just got to regroup, flush it, and get back to work tomorrow.
That's what pros can do. Flush it. Just flush it. It's over. You can't worry about it. You get ready for the next game. Listen, we said it last week that the series doesn't start. No playoff series starts, really, until a team wins on the road. Golden State's done that now, an NBA record 23 straight series. They've won a game on the road, which is just phenomenal. It tells you how great they are. The series is on now. It's tied at a game apiece. Now, I respect Paul Pierce. And he's an analyst on ABC and ESPN. And after the game, he said that was a must-win for the Raptors. I disagree. Was it maybe more important, perhaps, for the Raptors to win that game, knowing the injuries the Warriors went through? True. But Pierce said that it was a must-win before the game started. He didn't know that Thompson was going to get hurt, Looney was going to get hurt. Listen, to me, it's not a must-win. If Toronto lost game one, I would say it was a must win.
Oh, yeah.
But they won game one. Listen, all Toronto has to do, once again, one of the reasons why I'll still take the Raptors. I'm not going to change my tune in the series. I said in seven, I think it's going to be a long series. If it's a long series, that means teams are going to win on the road in the series. Probably each team's going to win on the road once. I think the Raptors are more than capable of going to Golden State and winning. If the Clippers can win there twice in one series, why can't the Raptors win once? So let's not sit here and say the series is over because Toronto didn't win despite Klay Thompson being banged up and he missed most of the fourth quarter and Steph Curry didn't have a great game and Looney is banged up and out and Kevin Durant is out. No, the Raptors can win a game at Golden State. That's all they got to do is win one game at Golden State and they get home court back. That's it. Now, to me, the championship-caliber teams get that win right back. They get it right back. They get it in Game 3. And that's the opportunity for the Raptors. If Klay Thompson can't go or isn't 100%, if Durant, even if he's a go, he's probably not 100%. He's going to be a little bit rusty, you would think, because it sounds like Steve Kerr said if he has one good practice, it's feasible he can play in Game 3. I mean, come on, man. Guy's gone how long? And all of a sudden he practices once, and now he's going to go game speed? That's asking a lot of anybody.
Yeah, definitely.
So to me, this is the game that the Raptors need to probably get is game three. If they're going to steal one on the road, it's to get this one in game three when the Warriors are banged up. Now, once again, the Warriors benefit from the schedule. No game today, no game tomorrow. That certainly helps Klay Thompson, and it certainly helps the Warriors. Then they'll play game four, just one day rest. Game four will be at Golden State on Friday. And then they wait all the way to Monday, and a series goes back to Toronto. So, and I like that. It used to be 2-3-2 at one point, and I like the 2-2-1-1-1 format a lot better. So, you know, the impression I have is, listen, I'm not surprised the series is tied at 1-1. And if it's a series that goes seven games that I'm predicting, odds are the series is going to be tied at some point. 1-1, 2-2, 3-3. So here we are, 1-1. Game on. Somebody won on the road. Raptors are plenty good enough to win a game on the road at Golden State if the Clippers can do it twice, and Portland should have won at least once. So And the Warriors are still banged up. But it was a missed opportunity for the Raptors because of the injuries the Warriors are going through.
Yeah, I, like I said, obviously I'm not changing my tune on what I picked either. So, you know, I don't, you do have to, like, this isn't a must win here in game three, but if they do, if they lose, they really need to get game four.
You don't, you can't, well, you can't go down 3-1.
Yeah, you can't go down 3-1 and not have home court advantage. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's not, it's not good. So you do, you have to get one of these back, and that's understood by the Raptors. That's understood by anybody that's playing in a series like this. If you lose home court within the first two games of this series, you've got to get one back in Oakland at some point. And whether that's going to be in game, you know, 3, 4, or 6, if you get that far, you've got to get it back no matter what. So, you know, I think that they're going to be focused and they'll be ready to go. That's the biggest question mark right now is, if I'm picking the rest of this series, who's going to be playing for Golden State?
Yeah.
And when and where and how much and how effective, you know? And so that's becoming the bigger question mark in the series for me is can Golden State hold up to do what I think they're going to do in 1-6 as I'm looking at the series? So that's, yeah, I mean, you know, it does feel like a missed opportunity for sure if you're the Raptors. And, you know, they had a lot of good things going early for them last night, and then the Warriors made that run, and they just they couldn't quite recover all the way from a nice – they did a real nice job there late getting right back into it. But, you know, just a couple bounces either way, it changes the whole complexion of the game there at the end. But the Warriors got what they needed, and now they're going to they have the advantage right now, but like you said, I mean, if the Clippers can win there, Toronto can win there, anybody can win there.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's no – nobody. I'm not going to sit here and say that the series is over because Toronto lost at home last night. Not even close. It's just like I wasn't going to sit here and say that I'm changing my prediction after Toronto kind of eased their way through a game one win. You know, it's like, no, I'm not changing my tune, and I don't think anybody should, no matter who they picked right at this point of the series.
It is a missed opportunity because they were up 12. They were in control of the game, and then they just I can't explain what happened in the third quarter. I don't know if I've seen a playoff game where a team goes on 18-0 run, and the team that goes on 18-0 run is the team coming out of the locker room that's the visitor. Usually it's the home team that does a run like that. It's hard to explain. And then Kawhi Leonard was very good last night, but the other supporting cast, like Van Fleet, missed some shots that maybe he would normally make late. Siakam was not the guy that scored 32 in game one, which you figured he'd come down to earth. And you know, the Warriors, all the injuries they're dealing with, Cousins came up big. Curry was, you know, good enough, although he wasn't really himself. Iguodala with the big shot. The Warriors found a way to win. That's a championship DNA. I will agree with Paul Pierce on that. And I think that is the question. The Raptors have not been here and done that. The Warriors have.
No.
And I think the Warriors know that, listen, we can't just go ahead and hand it right back in game three. But I also think the Warriors are like, listen, even if we do lose one of our next two at home, we can go in Toronto and one again. So I think the Warriors aren't really worried about where the games are being played, per se.
No.
I think the Raptors are more worried about that, and they should be, because if they don't get game three, then you got game four, which isn't till Friday. So let's just say that Durant plays a little bit in game three, and Thompson doesn't even play, and the Warriors win game three. Now you go into game four, and Durant's, you know, close to 100% or 90%, which we know is still pretty good if you're 90%, if you're Durant.
Yeah.
And Thompson suddenly is back and, you know, 90% himself. Okay, you missed a gigantic opportunity. So if the Raptors, I think game three, I won't say it's a must win, but I do think game three is a game that the Raptors, if they're going to win this series, I think they do need to win game three. Now, if they lose game three and win game four, doesn't matter. They got one back. Mm-hmm. But which one do you think they have a better chance of winning, game three or game four? Based on what we see on the horizon, I would
right
say
now,
game three.
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
Because you just don't know what you're going to get from the Warriors.
Exactly. And like I said, the championship pedigree teams, I mean, I remember the Bulls, the Lakers, the Celtics back in the day. When they lose a game at home in a series, they would get it right back. Not every time. But a lot of the times, they would get it right back. They would rip it right back. You get all excited about getting home court advantage. Pistons did it too. And you just rip it right back. And if the Raptors are a championship team and are going to win it all this year, I've got this feeling that they got to win. They're going to need to win game three. I have this weird premonition. And I think they can. And I'll say they can since I picked them to win the series. But I'm not going to overreact to just like game one. The Raptors look great. The Raptors are right there. They can sit here and say, listen, we could easily won game two. We just had a letdown in the third quarter. Well, in a championship series, you can't have letdowns.
You can't give up an 18-0 run to start the second half.
Not when you're controlling the game.
No.
At home. So that one might come back to bite the Raptors. College softball. Ty Clover's Oklahoma Sooners are in the College World Series Championship Finals against UCLA. Got a little bit hairy yesterday as Oklahoma lost to Alabama 1-0 earlier in the day with their ace on the hill. But they got by Alabama in the second game yesterday 7-3. So UCLA, Oklahoma, the best of three championship final series. Game one tonight, game two tomorrow, game three if necessary on Wednesday on ESPN. I don't follow softball real close, but apparently is there no innings or pitch limit at all in women's softball?
No, there's not.
Why not? Why it's not? Because what? It doesn't take any effort or any strain on your arm for throwing pitches?
The stress isn't like on the serious parts like baseball.
I know that.
That's why.
Right.
I mean, you can just go and pitch both games.
So hypothetically, all you need is one pitcher to pitch every single game for your team all year long. You don't even need a second pitcher.
Yeah.
That's just not right. To me, there should be a rule saying you can't pitch. If you throw so many pitches, you can't pitch the next game. I mean, because to me what happens is you got one person just way controlling the game. I mean, Rachel Garcia for UCLA threw 179 pitches yesterday.
Yeah.
179 pitches. She went the entire 10 innings. Struck out 16, didn't give up a run, so apparently she was still, had it. And then she had a walk-off three-run homer, and she's the National Player of the Year in softball last year and now this year. She's an amazing player. But I'm like, what is she, a robot? I mean, what is she going to do, throw 1,000 pitches? It goes 20 innings. She's going to go 20 innings? I think there'd be a lot more. I think this would, to me, this is just me. And I know, I understand that, LeBron's a great player. Michael Jordan's a great player. They could have taken every shot, and they had a huge advantage by having the best player on their team. But here's the thing. The ball moves around. A pitcher has the most control of any game when it comes to baseball or softball. The pitcher and catcher they touch the ball more than anybody by a mile. They're involved on every pitch. Mm-hmm. There's times outfielders, infielders aren't even – I mean, they can go ahead and take a nap and lay down for an hour. Nothing's coming to them. Like, seems to be that way with softball in regards to some of these games. I mean, she's a tremendous player, but to me, the better team would be the team that has depth, the team that's the more complete team. But in fairness, look at the Giants and the Royals in 2014. Who was the better team in that series? I'll argue it was the Royals till I die.
Mm-hmm.
But the Giants had the best pitcher. They had the guy that could win out of the bullpen in Game 7 that the Royals could not figure out. Now, Madison Bumgarner didn't pitch every game of that series. But as you said, it's a different throwing motion. I get all that. But I do ask the question, because I guess there's nothing technical holding Madison Bumgarner back except physicality to throw that many pitches. Should there be a rule in women's softball that you can only throw so many pitches in a game, or how many innings, or maybe it's just simply you can't pitch back-to-back games if you threw so many pitches in the previous game? Because to me, it's like, listen, you don't have to have a great second or third pitcher because you don't need one. Rachel's going to go pitch every time. It's just like every time I turned it on over the weekend, I'm like, it's the same exact people. Nothing's changed. It's the exact same people. I want to see a little bit of variety.
When I was in college.
I think it's kind of boring to watch 16 strikeouts. I know it's cool. Don't get me wrong. I think it's cool if it happens rarely. And granted, 16 strikeouts happens rarely because it was 10-inning game. That's why you get the 16 strikeouts. But if you watch women's softball, if you follow it a little bit, striking out 10 in a game is nothing.
No, not at all. When I was in college, I used to actually watch a lot of that over the summer breaks, the college softball World Series. And, Arizona had Jenny Finch. So, I had no problem watching Arizona play.
Were you really watching it for softball, Dusty?
Yeah, exactly. Sure I was.
Okay,
But, I mean, it was the same back then. Like, Jenny Finch would be starting every game. Cat Osterman, always out there for Texas. I've just grown so used to it. Kehlani Ricketts was a really good pitcher for Oklahoma here not long ago. And they go out there and they get the job done. And I think that's part of, everybody recruits to have a good team. So you recruit to try to get that pitcher that can lead you to the championship. And that's the philosophy that you got to take. It's not a lot of strategy if you can go get that player. But I think that's just part of the game for everybody. And they understand if you can get one of those dominant pitchers. I don't know that there needs to be a change. I really don't feel that way. I think softball is just a different animal all the way around. I think.
Well, let me ask you something, because this has been the Rockets have been criticized for this. And this is a five-on-five game, for crying out loud. James Harden has the ball in his hands all the time. Mm-hmm. Dribbles, I mean, it ain't even close. They keep track of the amount of dribbles. James Harden dribbles twice as much as anybody else in the NBA. It's insane. And people watch it and they say it is boring because it's Harden, 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 Harden. And I will say, I've talked with Todd and other people about it. I like to see the ball move. I don't like the ball going into the post to Charles Barkley and he bounces it 1,000 times and then turns and shoots a fadeaway. I think that is boring. I like to see the ball move. I will say, I'm not cheering for the Warriors to win the series, but I do like how they play without Durant. The ball moves. You know, I'm a fan of OKC. Westbrook and Durant, the reason they didn't make it to the NBA Finals that last time and didn't beat the Warriors and should have been the NBA Finals more than just once was because they didn't move the ball. They didn't trust their teammates. It stuck in their hands. And sometimes it got boring. I'm just saying, I think it gets a little bit boring when it's the same pitcher game in and game out and you don't have a lot of contact, which makes it boring as well because nobody's putting the ball in play. I mean, 16 strikeouts. There's 30 outs in 10 innings, 16 strikeouts. There wasn't a lot of ball in play in that game. It was a 0-0 game to the 10th inning. And then the three-run walk-off homer, which was very exciting. And I'm not criticizing softball just to pick on softball. I'm talking baseball's the same way right now. Baseball, it's different, though. Baseball doesn't throw out the same pitcher every game, but softball typically do. And I know we're into the final games of the year and you're trying to win a championship. So I get that. Hey, listen, if I was a coach or manager and I had a guy with a rubber arm and there's no pitch limit and I don't think he's going to hurt his arm, yeah, I'll probably throw him a lot too. Mm-hmm. And I saw it in Pee Wee baseball last year. A team had a kid and he threw a ton of pitches. And our kids nobody threw over 68 all year long because we just were worried about their arms and wanted to protect them. But if I had a stud that could throw that and didn't bother him, maybe I would have done the same thing. I don't know. But after a while, it does get a little bit boring because it's predictable. It's very predictable. This gal's going to pitch against this gal. It's going to be a 1-0 game. You know, soccer is predictable. There's not a lot of scoring in soccer. A lot of people like soccer. I'm not saying I don't like it, but I don't like 0-0 ties. Yeah. I like to see some action. I like to see some scoring. But when I look at sports in general, Major League Baseball, this is the way it's going. You're either going to strike out or hit a homer. Whatever happened to stealing bases, which the Royals do, but they still are 19-40. Yeah. What happens to moving the runners over? What happens to hitting runs? Instead, we're waiting for the big blast. And Major League Baseball last year is the first year ever in the history of Major League Baseball. You had more strikeouts than base hits over the course of a season.
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell you right now, I like baseball. I enjoy baseball, but I do not enjoy going to a baseball game and watching strikeout or home run. I want to see an extra base hit. I want to see a guy stretch a single to a double. I want to see a guy on a hit and run score from first all the way home, whatever it may be. I want to see some action is my point.
Sure.
I want to see in the field action. Well, Wade, you know, strikeouts are in the field action. Is it really? When seven guys don't touch the ball. My son, he used to like baseball a lot. Now he doesn't like it as much. And the biggest reason, and he's 12, and I think the younger generation's going this way, you know why he doesn't like it as much?
Boring.
There's not enough
action.
He can play in center, he can play at second, he can play at short, and if all it is a walk or a strikeout or hit batter, he never sees the ball. The only time he has any action is when he goes to the plate, and if somebody throws four pitches way outside, now his only action is running the bases.
Yeah.
So that is a problem for baseball and softball. And in softball, you can't steal either, by the way. You can't lead off, can't steal. So there's just... There is a part to the game, and they talk, well, baseball is America's pastime. I don't know, man. I don't know anymore. Because you watch the younger generation, it isn't really into baseball as much as it used to be.
Oh, no.
Not at all. And the football is the biggest sport in America, no question. But it does beg the question, do you need to change the rules? And I'm just using this as a hypothetical. Do you need to change the rules with softball, or do we need to change the rules in baseball somehow to get more action? I don't know how you get more action in baseball because the guys are either going to swing and miss.
Yeah,
or they're
that's
gonna,
the hitters.
Right. I don't know you can do anything there.
You could
speed up the pace of play.
Better or
pace of
not
play
teach
might
them
help.
Better, but yeah.
Maybe piece, that, pace of
that's
play.
That's for baseball. The reason I'll watch the Royals, but I really don't watch baseball because I can't. There's too much dead time for me.
I agree. And that's exactly
now,
what
if
my
I
son's
can,
like.
If somebody after the game can like take out all the dead time, condense that game, I can. If I have the Royals on DVR, I can watch the Royals game in 20-25 minutes.
Sure.
Because you just
you can hit the 30-second button and you don't miss a pitch.
You don't exactly. And if I could get somebody just to condense that into 20-25 minutes for me, the actual stuff that happens in a baseball game, then I would be more apt to watch more of it other than just the Royals. And, you know, when the Royals aren't good, I'm not watching as much of them either. I mean, that's just kind of human nature. But I don't know what you do in the baseball realm of things because of what we're talking about right here. But
in softball, you could make a change in regards to not having the same pitcher pitch all the time.
You could, but I'm going to be honest with you. Like, I enjoyed watching Cad Osterman go out there and dominate. Like,
Let me stop you right there. But would you enjoy that watching it all season long? Because you don't watch softball until it's crunch time.
Well, it's not on.
See, well, I know, but that's my point.
I mean, if they were that dominant, I probably would not like a pitcher for Washington. Man,
wouldn't it get old after a while? Oh, Cad Osterman struck out 15 and Texas won 1-0.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that get old after a while? You're telling me it wouldn't?
But Texas doesn't usually win 1-0 when she's usually see offense on the other side.
3-0,
you know,
whatever.
Those regular games.
Isn't it boring, though, when you know the outcome before it starts?
It might be. I don't know.
I'm just saying, over the course of a whole season. Like, if Madison Bumgarner pitched against the Royals all season, every single game, and the Royals couldn't hit him, wouldn't that get boring?
For Royals fans, for sure, yeah.
I think even for Giants fans it would. I think it would.
I just like I say,
sometimes teams that win a lot gets boring. There's people, Patriots fans, like, oh, man, this was kind of exciting this year because we actually had to go on the road and beat the Chiefs.
Yeah.
Whereas some years they say it's kind of boring. You get spoiled by winning. You know, KU fans are that way. Oh, we won another Big 12 title. Yay, that's awesome. But we didn't win the Final Four. We didn't make the Final Four. What? You don't enjoy success? But we get accustomed to certain things, and we're like, well, you know, that's just the way it's supposed to be. And that's one thing I really get tired of and hearing in life, let alone in sports. Well, that's just the way it is. Well, why the heck can't you change it?
Yeah.
I'm not saying they have to.
I don't think there's going to be a big movement to change anything in softball.
No, here's another question. Why is the Oklahoma Sooners the number one seed in that College World Series, all right? Yesterday in the first game against Alabama, Alabama had to beat Oklahoma to force a decisive game because Oklahoma, number one seed, going into the – they had a 41-game winning streak this year in softball. Best team in America pretty much all year long. They happen to just be playing Oklahoma City in their backyard. That's just how it works because that's who hosts the College Softball World Series. Mm-hmm. So they are undefeated in bracket play. They're playing Alabama yesterday in game one, and if Oklahoma wins, then they don't have to play a second game against Alabama. It's double elimination. Alabama's already got one loss, and that's because Oklahoma beat them earlier in the College World Series 3-2. Here's my question. Why in the heck is Alabama the home team?
They just rotate on those.
That's stupid.
I don't know why. Yeah.
Sorry, going to say it. Stupid. What? The best team should have – the team with the winning record, okay, and this is a neutral site situation. To me, they should be – especially in a situation where Alabama – like, I understand the best of three series coming up. I get that part. I'm actually okay. It's a best of three series. Oklahoma's a higher seed. I would hope Oklahoma gets games 1 and 3, the last at bat, I would hope. And UCLA gets the last at bat in game 2. But why is Alabama getting a last at bat in an elimination game? They're the ones that lost Oklahoma first time. Oklahoma earned that right. Why has Oklahoma got to be the visitor?
Now, Alabama beat them the game before that.
No, they didn't. Oklahoma beat Alabama first time played in the College World Series this year.
This was the first game that Alabama was the...
Yesterday, Alabama, the first game. They played before that, doesn't
it? Yeah.
That's how Alabama had a loss.
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
okay.
I thought you said it was the second game that Alabama was...
No, it's the second game they played in the series. Yeah. It was the first game yesterday.
See, when you said second game, I thought you meant second game.
Because Alabama lost Oklahoma in the first game when they played
earlier
in the week.
I think Oklahoma definitely
beat them 3-2. Oklahoma is undefeated in bracket play. Alabama has a loss to Oklahoma, and Alabama gets the hit last and be the home team in an elimination game for them yesterday.
Yeah.
Now, the second game, Oklahoma got a hit last. I don't quite understand that part. I heard the announcers talk about it, too. They don't quite agree with it either.
I don't have a good explanation for that at all.
Yeah. I mean, you're the best team all year long. You're the number one seed. You haven't lost in the College World Series. You're playing a team that's facing elimination, why are they going to get the benefit of hitting last?
Yeah.
I don't understand that. I'm not an expert on softball. I don't pretend to be. I'm just throwing it out as a hypothetical. I'm not saying they have to change the game. I'm just saying, would it be a little bit more interesting to say, because we talk about this in Major League Baseball, and we'll look at the Golden State Warriors. They've got star after star. They're winning without their stars. Could UCLA win the College World Series without their star player? Of course not.
No, probably not.
Could Oklahoma win the College World Series without their star pitcher? Probably, of course
probably
not.
Probably not, no.
Because they haven't developed or don't, I don't know if they developed, but I don't know what they have behind those gals. I haven't seen one of the other pitchers
pitch for
either team.
They have to have somebody, obviously, if there would be some kind of injury, but they're not going to be the same caliber.
Right.
At this point in their career,
they might end up being. So then they come in and they're not as good, so now the ball's suddenly finally put in play, and now we've got a 7-5 game instead of 1-0, 2-0, 2-1.
Yeah.
I think that's more exciting.
Well,
I like to
I think everybody would feel that would be more exciting.
It's like soccer. Do you like 0-0 tie or do you like a 2-1 game? I would rather have the 2-1 game. Call me a guy that likes offense. Now, I don't need to have a soccer game that's 12-11, all right? I don't need a softball game that's 12-11. All I'm saying is I like a little bit of offense. Now, Washington, UCLA, 0-0 to the 10th inning. Finally, a walk-off homer by the girl that threw 179 pitches. The Oklahoma-Alabama game, bottom of the 8th inning, no one had scored. After I watch a little bit of softball, I know people that may be softball professionals may go, well, that's what's great about softball is it comes down to that last at bat, 0-0, no runs, great defense. Is it great defense if the ball's never put in play? I'm not saying never, but not put in the play a lot. Is that great defense? I know pitching's part of defense. I get it. If they can't hit your pitching, then, that's great. Catcher caught the ball. Woo-hoo! Wing it around the horn. But is, I mean, the first two games yesterday, there was 18 innings played, and one swing of the bat got three runs in the bottom of the 10th for UCLA. In Oklahoma-Alabama game, nobody scored a run until the bottom of the 8th, which was Alabama, to force it. Now that 7-3 game last night, Alabama-Oklahoma, I'm like, that's kind of refreshing. At least there's some runs.
Yeah.
Now, I would rather see it 7-6 to make a little more excitement instead of 7-3. But, hey, I'm getting picky here. At least I got some runs. I'm not saying I need runs all the time. I'm kind of like Major League Baseball. I like a 2-1 well-pitched game. I like a 1-0 well-pitched game. But do I want to see that 6 out of every 7 times? Of course not.
No. Like, yeah.
And how dominant are these pitchers? These are the best teams in the country, and these pitchers are dominating them.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying.
Should the mound be
too
moved back? Here's another question. Should they change the dimensions? Are they too close? Is it harder to hit because they're too close? They're just too dominant. If you want more offense in softball, do you need to change the dimensions? Listen, I'm just throwing anything out there. I'm not saying they need to change anything. I'm just, as a person on the outside looking in, I'm saying, listen, I'm enjoying it. I've watched some of this. I've enjoyed watching some of it. But I'm like, where's the offense?
Yeah.
I mean, most of them didn't even get a decent scoring chance.
Yeah. But I could come back and say, in theory, if they're playing at this point of the season, these should be the best offenses.
They should be.
In the
Which means the pitching is
too.
Clearly better than the offense.
Yeah, and it usually is. And that's why you go out and recruit a guy or a girl like Osterman or Jenny Finch or Kelani Ricketts or Taryn Mowens or somebody like that, you know, that.
Should one player or one athlete be able to dominate a team sport like that? Because think about it. Michael Jordan certainly didn't. Kobe Bryant didn't. LeBron James hasn't. Maybe in spurts. But to just dominate a series, I mean, talking like basically nobody can guard me and I'm scoring all the points. That doesn't happen in the NBA. It doesn't happen in a team sport. It doesn't really happen in any other team sport that I can think of top of my head. Like the NFL, Tom Brady can't do it all by himself.
Yeah.
You know? Patrick Mahomes can't do it all by himself. Michael Jordan couldn't do it all by himself. I guess maybe Wilt Chamberlain would be the one you could go back and, you know, he had 50 points and 30 rebounds and 12 block shots or whatever, but still, I'm sure he didn't bring the ball down the floor. Whereas in softball, all you got to do is have a catcher that catches it.
Yeah.
You just, one person can completely control the entire, not just game, the entire College World Series is what I'm trying to say. I don't know if that's good for the sport. Maybe I'm dead wrong. I very well am open
to that. If I'm talking about softball, the thing I think is more weird than having a pitcher that can pitch however many pitches she wants is the re-entry when somebody can leave the game while on the bases and have a courtesy runner, and then they come right back in the next inning. Those are there's some different things
in softball. We do that. That's what we have in baseball.
Yeah, there's some different things in softball that are like, maybe maybe it'd be more strategy.
Well,
if you
how
did
about
that,
Washington's pitcher yesterday? She went out after 6 2/3 and came back in the 10th inning.
Yeah, you can
and then gave
and
up
pitch.
The game winning home.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, but by the way, do you know that in Major League Baseball you can do that as well? As long as they're still in the game, they can't leave the game. But you can.
Well, yeah, you can move them.
Alex Gordon could pitch the first inning tomorrow night, go back to left, come back and pitch the fifth inning, go back to, he could go to right field. He could then go pitch the seventh inning. He could go catch the eighth inning, pitch the ninth inning.
Yeah.
You can do as much as you want as long as you're still in the game. Now, the reentry is the thing I'm talking about.
You're on the base paths and you come out of the game of baseball, you're done for the game.
Right.
Like,
yeah,
you're
not playing
again.
Yeah.
Terrence Gore is your replacement.
Yes.
He's in the game.
Right.
So you either, you
there
gotta,
is no reentry.
You got to go with a bad bat. Or replace Terrence Gore right after that.
The Cubs had never stuck with that. Terrence Gore had to hit in the playoffs. Was that last year, I think?
Yeah, it would have been last year.
Yeah, exactly. Man. Let's see. I got a question here totally out of the blue. explain why 8-man and 11-man All-Star games are both Saturday. Well, first of all, that's a pretty simple explanation. The 8-man All-Star games have always been the second Saturday in June. Always. Shrine Bowl decided to change it and move it up, way up, and it's at Dodge City, and they chose the exact same weekend the 8-man did. That's on the 11-man, that's on the Shrine Bowl.
You got to talk to the Shrine Bowl.
Talk to the Shrine
Bowl. That has nothing to do with
it. That has nothing to do with 8-man. 8-man has had this weekend for 34 years now, I think it is. I mean, it's been this way for years. They always have it booked. It's always on the calendar. We don't even have to ask Dave Dubert what's the date. We know when the date is. I mean, we double-checked just to make sure in case they would change something. I even remember sending a deal to Dave about when I found out that the Shrine Bowl 11-man All-Star game would be held on the same Saturday. I was like, are you guys going to change that? And he's like, no, this is when we have it. And why should they change it? They're the ones that had it first. But there's nothing illegal to have an 11-man game, another part of the state, the same time an 8-man game is.
No.
And by the way, it doesn't impact many people anyway.
Yeah, I think there might have been one kid this year that had to decide whether he wanted to play the Shrine Bowl or the 8-man.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure he picked the 8-man game because he knew he was going to play.
Yeah, right. So there might be a couple of kids. Because every year when we do the broadcast, there's, I think, maybe two or three kids over the course of the four rosters. So we're talking 80 players. There's maybe two, three kids at most that have been picked for both the Shrine Bowl 11-man All-Star game and the 8-man All-Star games. So it doesn't affect very many people at all. And to me, it's not really that big a deal. But I will say, if you want to get upset with anybody about and get mad about why the games are the same day, talk to the Shrine Bowl. Because the Shrine Bowl usually had their games in what, early August, late July?
It was the last weekend in July.
Last weekend in July. Now bumped it up 6 weeks. So that was their call. Now, part of it, I believe, has to do with where they wanted to have it,
if I remember correctly. Yeah. I think there's something about Dodge that was...
In regards to that was the weekend that was open. I don't know if the Shrine Bowl...
It could be. I think a lot of it has to do with because Dodge is probably going to be using that field because JUCO practices start a little bit earlier than the NCAA, so they're probably going to be practicing at the normal time.
I wonder if the Shrine Bowl is going to stick with that same weekend every year.
Yeah, I don't know.
I hope not.
Yeah, I know. On the off chance that I might want to go watch somebody play or something, you just don't have that option.
I hope not, but I get the text. Don't get me wrong. I get the text, but... the reason it's the same day is because 11-man Shrine Bowl decided to put it on the same day. And they were well aware of when the 8-man game is. It's just that might be the only date they had available to have it in Dodge City, and that's the way they got to do it. And, so be it. Both games are survived. Neither one's going to be hurt attendance-wise because they're not even close in proximity to one another. But probably who it affects the most would be the two or three kids, maybe four at the most, that get chosen for both.
Yeah.
They have to pick which one they want to play. Would you agree with that?
Oh, definitely.
Okay. NHL hockey, game four is tonight. And the Bruins absolutely just rocked the Blues the other night, 7-2. To me, the story of that wasn't anything to do with hockey. It was about Chiefs players wearing St. Louis Blues uniforms. Yeah. That was tough to kind of swallow, to be honest with you. Although there is no Kansas City hockey team, so why would we even care? That was all a publicity stunt. That was all about the Chiefs trying to get people to be Chiefs fans in St. Louis now that the St. Louis doesn't have an NFL team.
Yeah.
That's all that was. But Travis Kelce's wearing a Wayne Gretzky throwback Blues jersey, and he's having a great time. And then Patrick Mahomes gets on the Jumbotron, and then he has a beer, a can of beer, and he chugs it. First of all, that is a crock. That was an empty can. You cannot tell me that beer, or there wasn't a lot in that can.
Yeah.
When Patrick Mahomes went back, I faked my chugging before way back in the day, okay? I've played that little trick before. And some people, inebriated, don't understand and just think it's hilarious. Well, unbelievable you could do that. Listen, it's pretty easy. Hey, you need to chug your beer. Well, sure, I'll chug my beer. I only got 3 ounces left. I think I can handle it. And then you tip it way back to make it really look like you really chugged it. And Mahomes did that, and that was total acting. I guarantee you that beer was not full. I can assure you of that. And Gary Dieter, his good buddy on the Chiefs, he put on Twitter, dude, that was not a beer. That beer wasn't full. I think he put, it's an empty can. No, it could have been. It could have been. But anyway, Mahomes was wearing a Blues jersey. So was Kelsey. And that didn't bring the Blues luck at all. 7-2 was the final. So game four is tonight in St. Louis, and that's a must-win for the Blues. They're down 2-1, and the Bruins have a chance to go up 3-1 tonight in game four of the Stanley Cup Finals. So that'll put a wrap on this. Hey, if you got any ideas, thoughts, it's not a big deal. Listen, softball's, I enjoyed watching it. I have. I will probably still watch some of the championship series. And I will say this. I sat there and I watched softball, and every year I go through this, and my oldest son watched a little bit with me, and then my wife watched a little bit the other day, and we're all mesmerized at how anyone, I don't care if it's a woman, girl, boy, man, can throw the ball like that, that hard, and move it around from spot to spot and have a rise ball, a spin ball, when they're winding their arm about 4,000 times like a windmill. Mm. I don't know how you can possibly control the ball that way. I have more admiration about that than a lot of things in sports. It just looks so easy. They make it look effortless. I do not know. I think my arm would fall off. I know it's easier on the arm, they say. To me, it looks like, wow, I can feel my rotator cuff swelling right now just thinking about it.
Yeah.
It's amazing how those pitchers pitch and pitch that well. And like you said, against the best competition in America, apparently, and nobody's touching them. That tells you how good they are.
Yeah.
Or do the rules need to be changed, even the playing field? That's for somebody else to discuss other than us, because our show's over. Thanks for tuning in. Have a great day, everybody. And remember, 8manallstars.com is your website for everything you need for the 8-Man All-Star Games this weekend.
Punch your ticket to local sports talk with the Sports Ticket Podcast. Now available via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.
All right, one more nugget I failed to mention because got caught up in softball. Isaiah Zuber done playing at Kansas State University as we figured as he entered the transfer portal. He might line up against K-State next season, however. Zuber, a senior receiver, announced he'll transfer to Mississippi State. He announced that on Friday as a graduate transfer. He's immediately eligible to play for the Bulldogs. And guess what? K-State plays at Mississippi State on September 14th. Stay tuned.